struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I have with me today Gabe Cooper. Gabe, how are you today?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Glad to be here.
It's nice that we can connect over many miles and time zones on this Zoom thing and actually, you know, get to know somebody online. It's wonderful. Gabe here is the creator of Virtuous, a CRM and giving system that allows nonprofits to actually connect and build stronger relationships with their donors. Gabe, why don't you tell us a little bit about Virtuous?
Yeah, it's a fundraising platform. We felt like the traditional way to do CRM in the nonprofit space was a little bit antiquated, but more importantly, it treated donors just kind of like names in a database, like ATM machines. You know, most organizations that we saw were just pumping out, you know, newsletters or emails, and it was every donor got all the exact same thing, and it felt kind of like a wet blanket on generosity. And so we created Virtuous as a way to help organizations build better relationships with donors at scale. And so we do that through a CRM that's really focused on listening to donors well, figuring out what makes them tick, what they're interested in. Do they have kids? What made them give originally? Like, what are they into? And then once you can connect with people in a more personal way, we use marketing automation to begin to tailor the right email or mail piece or phone call at the right time to each donor, depending on their needs and where they are in their donor journey. And we find that when organizations do that well, donor retention goes up, average gift goes up, engagement goes up. It turns out it's better all around when you can treat people like people.
But the fun fact that people are people, and they respond a lot better when you treat them like they're people, which sometimes we forget to do when we just have this endless list of things that we have to take care of in a day. But we were talking beforehand that we actually know the same person, Brady Josephson from Next After, which was on a couple of weeks ago, episode 48, I think it was. What were you working with Brady on?
Yeah, it's funny. It's a funny connection. We just launched today a study, a multi-channel giving study. And so the study that we did with Next After was all about how do donors respond when you send them messages on multiple channels. So after they give a first gift, for example, are you communicating on email only, mail only? Do you give them a call? And when you communicate across multiple channels, how does that affect giving? And the punchline from the study, you should go download the whole study, but the punchline is organizations aren't doing this well today. And so we looked at, you know, 100 plus organizations that are mid to large organizations, and they weren't communicating across multiple channels well. But when organizations do, you see giving go up substantially. Like, it's a massive increase in giving. Like, for example, if you can take an online donor and send them a mail piece and they give offline as well, it's a massive lift. And so it's been fun to do that with Brady and their team. He's a smart dude, and their attention to detail with data is just above my pay grade for sure.
I mean, we all have the things that we excel at, and we call that our zone of genius, but there's certain things like I am no good at tech stuff, so I outsource that to people that are way smarter than me, and why wouldn't I? I can't possibly be the guru at everything. I'm hardly the guru of one thing, but definitely got to find where we work best. So why create? I mean, I know you mentioned a little briefly, but like why actually get in and create a technology piece that's going to be a big boost to the nonprofit? Like what gives you that drive? What's your why for really getting involved in this?
I have a passion for generosity. And so I have a passion for generosity because giving has the ability to create unbelievable amounts of good in the world, whether it's helping hurting or oppressed people or even the environment or animals, no matter what your cause is, giving has an amazing opportunity to create good in the world. It also transforms the heart of the giver. And so when people are more generous, something happens inside you. You stop looking at yourself so much and you start looking at others. And so I'm just a huge believer in that. Right now in the US, as a country, we give 2.5% of our money to charity. It's 2.5% of GDP, about $420 billion a year. which is great. We're a generous country, but I think as wealthy as we are and the advantages that we have, we could be giving a lot more. And so we want to move the needle on generosity here in the U.S. and globally. So that's where it starts for me. What we found was I used to work at a big nonprofit and have worked building technology for nonprofits for a long time. What we found was nonprofits weren't doing a great job, like I said, treating their donors like people. They were just sort of an ATM machine. They were an ends to a mean. And there wasn't this sort of care of nurturing a personal relationship. And as a result, in this country right now, that typical nonprofit will turn over 50% of their donors every year. Like they'll lose 50% and have to add another 50%. So they're on this constant treadmill of just trying to keep up just to maintain what they did last year, which is horrible. But what we found was if you treat people like people and use technology to do that at scale, that you see much better results, you increase giving and you increase impact. And so that's the why behind it for me, is I just want to see these organizations raise more, do more good in the world.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing what I'm doing a little bit different way. We're both helping the helpers. We want to make sure that the people providing services are really just able to accomplish their mission as easily and painless as possible. And so they can focus on the people that are both donors and the people they're delivering services to. Absolutely. So before we hopped on here, Gabe was taking a look at my little background that I've got, the airplane that I fly in the Navy and a few things on the wall. And he's like, is that a samurai sword? And we got into this conversation about church retreats and how after John Eldridge's book, Wild at Heart, came out, that everyone started doing this, like a howl at the moon type retreats. Have you ever done one of those retreats, Gabe?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of those kind of men's retreats before, and so it's always fun and entertaining. I think sort of above and beyond the retreat experience, I'm a big believer in what my friends and I sometimes call durable relationships, meaning do you have a group of people around you who have your back no matter what, when things are good and things are bad, that you can be transparent with and vulnerable with. I think life is too short to go through it alone. Those kind of retreats can be a good sort of starting point for real durable relationships. And yeah, I'm a huge believer in that.
If you're in this space at all, the nonprofit space, you know that relationships are key. And they're king. So I'm really happy to hear someone that has a product like you have, which is fantastic. Actually, it really, your why aligns with what you do in real life and that you care so deeply about this. How can automation help grow your giving? I know there's so many things that we do in a day, especially in the nonprofit world, but why should someone choose to automate? How is that helpful?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a really practical example that we know. If somebody becomes a new donor to an organization, there's a 76% chance that they'll never give again, right? They give once and they're out for whatever reason. But when we know that we can send them a set of communications, like a new donor welcome series, where we educate them on the organization, we're incredibly grateful, we respond fast, that first to second gift conversion goes way up. People are like, no, I'm not out. I want to keep giving. This is awesome. Like, I'm getting the dopamine rush. Somebody thanking me. I'm making a difference in the world. The organization showing me my impact. I'm going to give again. And most organizations sort of know this, but logistically, it's really hard to be that responsive to donors. They're like, I got to mail them and email them, and we don't have time to call them, and I'd like to follow up in that personal way, but it's just too hard. So automation is sort of the magic engine that sort of runs behind the scenes and watches for specific donor behavior and triggers that email, that direct mail piece. It prompts somebody on your team to make a phone call. It can send a postcard. And so it does all that behind the scenes to save your staff time, because there's no way with limited staff and resources nonprofits can do that on their own. And so automation is the engine that sort of empowers that kind of personal communication.
Oh, absolutely. And I know most of my listeners, as far as I understand, no one's told me differently. They're startup nonprofits. They're trying to figure this stuff out from square one. And the list of things you have to do as a startup nonprofit is just astronomical. And if you didn't get it done today, don't worry. We're going to add more stuff to you tomorrow to get done. And something like automation is really going to take a lot of that burden. Because especially early, it's a burden to get all this stuff done and make sure you're doing it right. And you want to do it right. So why not automate and get some backup, get some of that artificial intelligence working on your behalf to make it a little bit easier, lighten the load as you go through your work week and your giving cycle and your contact cycle and your fundraising cycle. And, oh, did you call the board members and everything else that you have to do? So I know you recommend that you talk across multiple platforms. You talk in person, they get mail, you talk to them online. Well, what's the best way for nonprofits to increase their donor retention and keep them in the family?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that are really important. One is, are you being personal? And so if you look at most of what you send to donors, is it based on their timing and interest or your timing and interest as a nonprofit? So, hey, every November, we're going to have a matching gift appeal and we're going to blast it out to everybody. Do you know that your donors actually care about that? Have you listened to them enough to understand what their individual needs are? Are you just doing it based on your needs and your timing? Are most of your communications talking about the donor, or is it talking about you, how awesome you are as an organization? And so I think the first step is just how can I be more personal with my donors and meet them where they're at, and so they feel like I actually care about them? How grateful am I, and how much am I just talking about myself? And so those principles, I think, are sort of transcendent in doing good donor retention. But the other one is just being able to follow up fast and to follow up on multiple channels. You know, that we're talking about the study with Brady. If somebody gives you a gift online, even if it's a small gift, if you can call that person within the first 30 days, they also get a postcard in the first 30 days and they get a couple of emails. And those emails aren't just all asking for money, like treating them like they're an ATM machine. They're delivering value to them. They're, you know, sort of carefully crafted to figure out what that donor needs, and they're delivering value and they're cultivating a relationship. If you do those things well, you'll see donor retention turn around overnight.
That's good news. I know you said something like 76% don't ever give again after their first time. But you said something that I picked up on and I wanted to talk about a little bit. You talked about gratitude. And on the experiment that is Travis, I try to work on things all the time and see what I can come up with. And this past week, I was like, man, I have not really worked, like made an effort to work on my gratitude specifically. And I was like, what can I do? And I started going through my Facebook Messenger when I'm at work. That's pretty much the only way I can communicate with the outside world in our vault that we have over there. But I started going through and just anyone that was on, I was going through and sending them a message like, you know, I appreciate you. And sometimes I'd be a little bit more specific up front, but I just said, I appreciate you. I don't think we say it enough. It definitely feels wonderful to hear. And I got back all sorts of responses. I got back, thanks. I got back, thanks. I appreciate you too. Or thanks, that makes me feel good, but why do you appreciate me? And I go into detail. And I did this just for a few minutes. I had about 20, maybe 30 people. And just the feeling of really focusing on something like gratitude and making it a point was just, overwhelming. It made me feel great all day. And then the funniest thing happened. A guy that I had asked a question to, he's got like a TV show in Chicago. We were up in Chicago a few years ago. And I had asked him like where to go, what to hang out, you know, what do I got to see when I'm in Chicago? And at the time he didn't answer me. And just when I finished all of my gratitude that I had going out over the airwaves, he came back for no reason at all. He's like, I cannot believe it. I didn't send a reply to this. I have missed it. I was like, let me make it up to you. Why don't you come up on my TV show? And he's got E360 TV. He's got a show, Lauren Michaels Harris. Phenomenal guy. Had me on his show here Monday morning. And if you're listening to this, that would have been Monday, like the 21st of September. Out of the blue. And he's like, come on, you need to be on the show. And he loves, absolutely loves, loves, loves nonprofits. He also is a big foster care advocate, cares deeply about them. And I was blown away of the real world impact of something like focusing on gratitude.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And I think as nonprofits, what we forget is our gratitude is the sort of the number one thing that we can give to our donors. If I buy a pair of Nikes, I give them $100 and they give me a pair of shoes. That's the transaction. But if we're a charity, we don't have anything to give. We don't have a product to give back most of the time. The thing that we can give back is our gratitude. It's the thankfulness and gratefulness and reminding the people that are giving to us that they're making an impact on the world. And we really appreciate that. And so that is our currency that we're able to deliver to our donors. There's a buddy of mine. He runs fundraising at Hope International. And, you know, he talks about thanking donors 5 to 7 times before you ask them to give again, just being sort of overly grateful. And the impact that has on people's hearts is just, it can be transformative.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you said two things in there. They should show the gratitude and the thank you, but also show the impact that they're having. Too many times have I talked to organizations that they forget to deliver that impact and show a little quick video of the person or the process or the animal that you helped save. Like, hey, we're picking up trash and cleaning up parks. Send them a picture of the before and after of the stuff that you did. You're feeding the homeless. Send a picture of a group of people that you've served and that are eating hot, fresh, and ready meals thanks to this donor. If you're helping someone with PTSD, show them, if that's not the picture, give them the stats. Marine Corps veteran, served for 4 years, has been struggling with PTSD for X amount of years, and thanks to your donation, we were able to connect them with these services, and now they are well on their way to sharing their story and getting away from that PTSD that's been hurting them for so long.
Yeah, so totally agree. We launched a book about 5 months ago, Responsive Fundraising, and one of the chapters in there is just about closing the loop with donors, just because we think it is so imperative that nonprofits do this well. And it's historically been really hard. I mean, part of it is that there's usually a little bit of a silo between your fundraising team and your program team. So the people that are hands and feet on the ground actually making an impact, they're not talking to people on your fundraising team all the time and vice versa. And so we think, man, get rid of those silos. The people communicating with donors, get them out close to the front lines, and so they can actually tell the stories and then be diligent about following up. Just like you said, those examples of impact are great. There's an email from an organization called WOTC that we saw, and they give money to doctors on the front lines and sort of underserved countries around the world. And their follow-up email had a picture of a doctor serving a girl. It's like, hey, meet Estella. You know, your doctor Peter is working with Estella in Guatemala, right? And there's a note from the doctor, like, hey, by name, like, hey, Frank, thanks so much for your gift. Man, it's making a huge difference in Estella's life. And it's like, man, that is just so powerful, not to just the gratitude, but man, my dollars are helping that little girl right now. That's amazing. And you know, if somebody gives to WOTC and sees that email, they're going to be a donor for life. You know, they're in.
So impactful. I had a guest on a few weeks ago, Justin Zerletich, and we talked about giftology, and he talked about getting a gift that itself provides the impact or shows the impact of what you're doing. I think in the example he showed was getting a butcher block with the family's name as a real estate agent, getting the family's name, the established in the homestead date, and having that front and center. So when people come over, where did you get that butcher block? That thing is amazing. Can you imagine the difference if people in the nonprofit world gave gifts to donors like the note that you mentioned that had that little personal touch, that was something different, that had that giftology, the gift that keeps on giving, and it can be a showcase or a showpiece in your place that you'll continue to talk about. Like, I had a great experience with this nonprofit because of my giving. They're able to help young kids in Guatemala, and one person a year or one group a year actually gets to go to the front lines and see the work that they're doing, hands and feet on the ground. And to be able to talk about that experience has just got to be, you know, out of this world.
Yeah. Well, the one thing you said there, and it's an important distinction, is the guy that wrote the book Giftology, John Rulin, is a buddy of mine, and he always talks about, like, the gift can't be about you. right? And so the typical thing you would send is, you know, a butcher block with your logo on it. And nobody wants to pull out a butcher block with a real estate company's logo on it, even a nonprofit's logo, you know, a butcher block with World Help or Feeding America printed on it. That's not very exciting. But when you can make the gift about the donor and the impact they're having in the world, now that gift is going to be, that is the huge difference, right? So the gift can't be about you. It has to be about them. But when it's about them, it's incredibly powerful.
Are there for-profit practices that nonprofits could implement to help increase their generosity?
Yeah, I think the for-profit world is sort of been ahead of the nonprofit world in a lot of the areas that we've talked about. And so, you know, we've all had that experience where we show up on our Amazon homepage, right? And it's like, it's all about us. And so our entire Amazon homepage has like socks I need to reorder, the princess movie I need to buy for my daughter. Same with Netflix. I go to Netflix, completely personalized to me. We've all had the experience where we feel like Facebook is listening to us because I say, man, I'd like to see the Avett Brothers in concert again. And then all of a sudden there's an ad sitting there for the
Avett Brothers. Because they are listening to us.
Because they are listening to us. That's right. And so some of it's a little bit scary and spooky, and, you know, we should have a very real conversation about sort of data privacy and that kind of thing. But the important part there is what for-profits have figured out a little bit before nonprofits is if you can figure out who somebody is, just listen to signals. Like, what are they clicking on? How do they engage? What stage of life are they in? Where do they live? If you can use those in an intelligent way to communicate back out to them in real time, it's amazingly powerful. I mean, yeah, clothing companies do this to me all the time because I, shamefully, I spend more on clothes than my wife does by probably an order of magnitude. But clothing brands know this about me. And so they will load up my inbox with pictures of middle-aged dudes with graying beards wearing some fancy shirt. I'll be like, that looks great. I look great in that shirt, you know, and now I'm clicking on
it. Hey, you're allowed to be stylish. You don't have to be, it's not shameful or any of that. You're allowed to have nice clothes. I just got back from Bahrain and tailors out there were amazing. 3-piece suit, tuxedo, $100. Doesn't matter. Custom fit just for you. It's okay to look great. There's nothing wrong with that.
But I mean, I think that's the point is that for-profit brands have figured out, hey, if they can figure out who I am and then communicate to me in real time at that level, like my engagement goes through the roof. If nonprofits could have that same sort of tenacity around their cause, like let's figure out what makes their donors tick. Let's listen to signals. Where are they clicking? Where are they interacting? What data do I know about them? Do I know anything about their wealth or net worth? Do they have a lot of Twitter followers? What stage of life are they in? If I can figure that stuff out and then communicate to them appropriately, like engagement goes way up. Giving goes way up. And so, you know, if we could, you know, take a little bit of a clue from, you know, Nordstrom or Chick-fil-A, I think it would go a long way in helping us be better fundraisers.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A has come up a few times in my podcast interviews, and they're just so professional, so quick. We need to have the Chick-fil-A drive-through people change healthcare in this country. I just got off a call about some healthcare. I'm not going to rant about that, even though I really want to, because they're asking is ridiculous, but I'm stopping right there. I'm not going to get into that, but you just feel so great, so well taken care of. You feel like your time is valuable just going through the Chick-fil-A drive-through. I mean, can you imagine having that same feeling after interacting with your nonprofit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the thing is too, with Chick-fil-A or Ritz-Carlton is a great example of this, ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen is kind of the way they approach the world. And same with Chick-fil-A, it doesn't happen by accident. They are very, very intentional about training folks. Like, we're here to serve our customers. These are the words we use to be grateful to them and to thank them. Here's how we serve them well. And they practice that and they role play it. You know, it just doesn't happen by accident. I think there's a lot we can learn from nonprofits to be intentional about being personal and grateful with donors.
Intentionality, it goes for leaps and bounds, no matter what area of life we're talking about. Being intentional is phenomenal. Gabe, I want to know, how should nonprofit fundraisers respond to some of the biggest challenges today? I know we're dealing with COVID and we're on video chat and many people are homeschooling, but I mean, nonprofits still have a mission. There are still people in need out there. So what can we do in these times?
A couple of things is that if your mission was important before COVID, it's important now, right? And so no matter what that, we were talking before the call, my wife and I are really passionate about foster care and adoption. If that was important before COVID, it is critically important now. And so, and in crisis, people want to serve. It's been amazing watching the response during COVID. Yeah, there's a lot of polarization and name calling, but at the same time, people are desperate to make a difference. Like they want to serve. They're giving more in some cases during COVID. And so I think it's important to recognize that we can't just start mailing it in just because we're in a global pandemic. Now is the time when our cause is more important than ever. That's one. The other one is that I think this was a wake-up call for a lot of nonprofits where the old way of doing things, they've been threatening to change and innovate for the last 20 years and just couldn't quite move. Like this has been a wake-up call. And if there's any silver lining here, I think it's forced nonprofits to innovate in some really creative ways. And so the most obvious one is the nonprofits who just sort of, they've done the same gala at the same event venue for 20 years. Now all of a sudden, my gala's canceled. Like I can't do anything, right? And so it's made them think, man, like what else could I be doing to build relationships with my donors? Like how could I get more creative than just having this, you know, rubber chicken dinner and asking people for money? Is there a better way? And so I think it's important that we don't sort of let this crisis or let this moment get wasted and not take the time to sort of look inwardly and innovate. Look at the systems we're using, look at our tactics to say, how could we do this going forward? And the thing that's encouraging to me through COVID is we're seeing a lot of organizations doing that. A lot of organizations are taking this time when they're sort of stuck at home to make changes for the better, which is great. I think the other thing too is that a lot of organizations realized all of a sudden they weren't good at listening to their donors because this moment happened. They're like, should we ask our donors? How should we ask them for money now? Like, how are our donors feeling? Like, where are they at emotionally? And they realized, oh my gosh, these people are just all names in a database. I don't know anything about them. I don't know where they're at. I don't have a mechanism to hear from them to see how they're doing. Like I've never surveyed them. We're not on the phone with them. And so I think it's been a wake-up call to say, we need to have systems in place to better listen to our donors. So when this sort of moment happens, like we know where our folks are. We know how they're doing emotionally. We know how to care for them in a moment of crisis.
Well, the systems matter. If you're listening to this and you're considering starting a nonprofit, something that's not talked about is the high turnover rate from different fundraisers at all the positions in nonprofits, especially in the startup phase. There's a really good chance that you're going to go through a lot of people on your way through your first 5 years of operation. And if you don't have something like Virtuous in place with a CRM database talking about every interaction you've had with a donor, and your fundraiser leaves or your executive director leaves and you have no idea who's on your list, who you've talked to. When's the last time you talked to them? You don't even know the name of your dog. One of my guests, Patrick Kirby, says if you don't know the name of their dog, you can't ask them for more than $1,000 because you don't really know them. And, you know, my dog was in here causing a little ruckus before we started recording. My dog Nyla was all over that squeaky toy like she had never had one before. Dog's like 14, like, I love the squeaky. But you have to be able to really know something about these people, not just donors, not just a person on the call list, but actually know something about them as a person. Unless you're doing everything fully automated where you're not ever talking to any of your donors, there's ways to do that, but you have to have more than one stream of income as a nonprofit. You have to be able to connect with people. You can't do that if you don't listen, if you don't keep track of what you do, and if you've talked to a donor and you haven't codified it in some filing system, a CRM, a Google Sheet, or whatever you use, you're not doing your job.
That's right. The last time I looked, the average tenure of a donor rep in this country is like 18 months, right? Like you said, turning over all the time. And every time that person leaves, you lose intelligence. I think the more pressing issue is nonprofits, even with a high churn rate for donor development people, historically done a pretty good job with major donors. And that's because those major donor relationships, like you said, are so personal. So if you have a major donor rep in charge of all the guys that give 10 grand or more, like he's going to know, or she's going to know where they like to eat out, like the names of their kids, the names of their dogs, they're going to, because they actually have relationships. But functionally, we can only have that kind of relationship, sociology tells us, with like 100 people max. Like after that, we can't know the names of any more dogs. That's all we have. Well, the problem is nonprofits have a lot more donors than their top 100 or their top 50. You know, maybe they have 1,000 small donors after that that we don't know anything about. And so the thing that's an imperative for nonprofits, I think, in 2020 is how do we lean in and get to know just the everyday donor better? The person that gives us $1,000 a year, you know, set up $100 a month recurring gift, how do we get to know that person better? And that's where really things like software and data and more sophisticated tactics come into play. It's not good enough just to have a guy writing out notes on a legal pad anymore. That's not going to scale.
Yeah, that's not a good system. As you said, those very things, you can't just write down notes on a legal pad. I'm literally taking notes on a notebook. right in front of my awesome. System. Because you know, there's nothing like getting called out for exactly what you're doing, exactly why you're doing it. Thanks, Gabe. I appreciate that. So, let's talk a little bit about virtuous.org. What kind of organization should end up on this website, and what do you provide, and you know, why should they sign up with you?
We like people that are bought into this idea of responsive fundraising, right? If you're comfortable doing things the same old way and you're getting the results you want to get, like keep doing the thing you're doing. I think we're really interested in partnering with organizations who want to operate differently, especially in our new normal, who are committed to treating donors like people, and not just to your major donors, but to everybody. And so we're seeing with our organizations that they're increasing donor retention rates by 10, 12%. They're increasing average gift by 10% when they can communicate more personally with donors, and they're seeing real measurable growth. And so I think it's those nonprofits that are looking for a new way, a way to be more personal with their donors. And so if you fall in that bucket, yeah, highly encourage you to check us out, visit the website, and we'd be glad to have a conversation with you.
I'm looking through here, and it's looking like you got some different buckets to be in, looking primarily for mid-sized nonprofits and larger nonprofits. So if you're not quite in that bucket yet, don't worry, you can keep growing. There's definitely options for you. If you're a startup, or you are a small nonprofit, maybe not there just yet, but I know Gabe would love to talk to you. Anyway, Gabe, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Yeah, check us out at virtuous.org is a great place to start. If you're even if you're a startup that you're not quite in the market for something like this yet, that's totally fine. What we'd encourage you to do though is go to our website and go to the What is Responsive tab and start learning about some of the stuff we talked about. There's a playbook that you can download that gives you 28 plays that you can run today at your nonprofit. So just start somewhere. Don't get so overwhelmed, like we could never do this. It's better to just start and start layering in some of the practices that we've talked about. And you don't need massive expensive systems to pull all of it off. And so, yeah, visit virtuous.org, click on What is Responsive, download the playbook. And I think that'd be a great place for you to start to implement some of what we talked about today.
And we'll have that link in the show notes. If you're listening to this in your car, driving to work, hop on the show notes and we'll have a link right to virtuous.org/responsive so you can get that free responsive fundraising blueprint. I tell you what, I've had a great time talking to you today, Gabe. Love having you on the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.